In the continuing European heatwave, there have been lots of reports of dry riverbeds revealing hidden treasures, everything from Nazi warships to even mammoth bones. And the drought's also brought to the surface, in some cases, centuries-old stones used to mark previous low water levels from earlier dry times. They're known as hunger stones, and as well as recording dates, sometimes they're carved with ominous warnings like, "If you see me, weep." Joining us to discuss what the riverbeds are revealing is Dominic Collett, Professor of Environmental and Climate History at the University of Oslo. Dominic, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Hello.
So, Dominic, what are hunger stones?
They are a sort of landmark that is created to preserve the memory of extreme weather events, droughts in this case. And they've caused quite a stir in Central Europe because they have this benefit of only appearing mysteriously when the water levels are particularly low rather than other memorials that you see all the time. So people flock to them quite a bit in parts of the riverbed that are usually inaccessible. And they tell us of particularly low water levels and droughts throughout the centuries.
And whereabouts are these hunger stones found? And you said throughout the centuries, so I suppose also, how far back do they go?
Some of them record dates that do go back to the late Middle Ages, so several centuries old is pretty usual. And you can find them in that form all across Central Europe. Less so in Southern Europe, where droughts are more common, but where they are slightly unusual, such as in Central Europe, they do actually exist in most river systems. But you can also find some of those outside Europe. China has several similar stones and other areas too. And there is, of course, something similar, which is the famous Nilometer that records the level of the Nile River and also is used to kind of predict harvests and droughts for thousands of years back.
It's interesting that you say that they're not as common in places where the droughts are more common. I was wondering, is there any sort of correlation between the incidence of hunger stones and the major droughts in European history?
Well, there is absolutely a good correlation, and we can use them also to reconstruct weather patterns and even climatic changes over the centuries. But they are, of course, it takes probably a bit of work to go down there and carve these intricate things into there. So the motivation is probably higher in places where they're more rare. Speaking of which, of course, if you look at them these days, they are not that rare anymore. I remember when I first came into contact with them like 20 years ago, and I felt like, oh, this is such an unusual way to commemorate something. And now you have stones that record a drought like every century. And then 2018, 2020, 2022, 2026 now. So it's definitely becoming more common with global heating.
And in their original usage, they were, as you say, a way of marking the memory of a drought and a low watermark. It does seem that as they've become more common and in the 20th century, they've sort of taken on a slightly different meaning and become something like tourist attractions. Could you tell us about that evolution?
Yeah, I mean, basically they react to the fact that we are very bad at memorizing extreme weather events. I would say most of us remember their first kiss, but if I asked my students what the weather was like 3 weeks ago, they struggle, yeah. Right? And our memory is just not kind of made to conserve those particularities of weather over time, let alone climate. So they are an attempt to kind of find some sort of record to warn people of these occasional extreme events. And of course, in pre-industrial times, those are pretty severe. I mean, these really carry some meaning, right? A water level that low that you're seeing now with these stones revealed would mean extremely bad harvests, probably also very, very difficult transport. River systems in Europe really account for a lot of grain shipments at the time. And the correlation between those stones appearing and severe famine setting in those countries is high. So they are not just a tourist attraction in those days, they're really something serious. And of course, these underwater stones are flanked by other memorials that are above water that also commemorate famine or flood events or other extreme events just to kind of make up for this deficiency in our memory. But now, of course, they have taken a different meaning. There is a couple stones that were inscribed by Greenpeace or Extinction Rebellion even, right? And they are now seen as a warning to what global warming and global heating does to us. And I think they are still, in a sense, relevant, because we see that these water levels still impact us, maybe not with a famine, but on the River Rhine, for example, or the Elbe River in central Europe, ship transport is now almost impossible. And suddenly you wake up to the fact that a lot of goods are still transported by river. It also means ferry crossings are closed. And I think a lot of the power stations that need cooling, particularly nuclear ones, are now out of service. So it's not as in pre-industrial times, when it means bad harvests and the mills are not running and you can't transport anything at all. But they still have a severe implication, I think.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Dominic Collett, Professor of Environmental and Climate History at the University of Oslo. Going right back to the earliest hunger stones, as I understand it, all that would be found on the stone was an inscription of the date. But there's also been this trend of messages of various sorts, some quite doom-laden, being included in the inscriptions as well. How far back does that phenomenon go, and has it changed over time?
Well, we probably have to acknowledge a lot of these stones are probably just gone, right? Or the inscriptions are worn off by the water, or we haven't found them yet, though. I think the river levels are now so apocalyptically low in Central Europe that there's not much left to discover. But they sometimes do just record a year, and that is the same thing that you would see in a flood mark, right? Where it would just state the on the river bridge, for example, and it would kind of mark those. These more lyrical poetry kind of descriptions are quite rare, and they usually have moral implications, such as either don't despair, something, you know, will come, or be prepared and don't spend your money wastefully, those kind of things. But they do commemorate some of the strongest kind of drought events that we know. Usually they come from a period that we associate actually with cold and wet weather, something we call the Little Ice Age, which makes these drought events even more surprising to those people. But some of them are really phenomenally catastrophic. The mega drought of 1540 is one such black swan event, as we call them, because they're so unusual that you just can't predict them. And that meant about 11 months or so without rain in Central Europe, something unthinkable for people at the time. And it led to trees losing their foliage, almost no harvest of grain at all the mills coming to a standstill. And this is really catastrophic also in terms of the death toll it produces. But we also have a stone or several stones that commemorate 1666, another big drought, and also famously the year of the Great Fire of London. The River Thames has obviously a marine system that keeps it fed, but it was so dry and parched at the time that when the fire started in the old town of London, everything was so dried out that it burnt like cinder. And the fire services at the time, rudimentary as they were unable to do anything. So those stones do actually connect to some really dramatic events.
One of the striking things about the current heat wave is how much it's affected the populace, because the incidence and the severity of the heat seems to be out of recent living memory. The sweep of history of climactic change that you've looked into, Dominic, is much broader. How do you see the current severity of climate events in Europe compared to what Europe's experienced over the centuries that you've studied?
Yeah, I get asked this a lot, of course, because people use history to situate what is happening right now. And that is also what we're doing in a scientific way. And the current level of extreme events that we're seeing is really unpredicted at all. I mean, we've looked down, maybe confidently, we could say, to the year 1400 or so, where we have good written documentation in addition to all kinds of other proxies, indirect sources of information. And you do see changes. There is the Little Ice Age. There's also a medieval climate anomaly that you can trace, but they're so much slower, right, in their pacing and also in amplitude. They're not comparable at all to what we're seeing now. So I think these stones can still be of some sort of help, right? Because it is so difficult for us to just make a mental image of weather over a longer period of time. And they're very graphic in the way that they see those kind of impacts coming closer and closer together. I think they also tell us a story of things that were extremely unusual and so remarkable, becoming almost commonplace now. I mean, I am in Norway, in the far north of Europe, so the current heat wave hasn't affected us so much, luckily, but I do, of course, travel and I do get reports. And elsewhere, I think people struggle to kind of make sense of what is just an unusual event and what is a trend, right? And those stones make this very visual.
And given that practical assistance in terms of the shortcomings or natural proclivities of human memory, do you think that these events that are occurring at the moment, Dominic, should be commemorated in similar ways? Or are there new ways of recording these extreme climate events that you think would be of benefit to human memory?
Well, in the historical period, they, of course, also react to the fact that a lot of people were illiterate, right? So they are part of a whole genre of memory marks that can also take other forms. There is songs that commemorate extreme climate events. There's theater plays, even maybe most famously Midsummer Night's Dream that talks about strange weather a lot. There are famine medals that people keep at home and that have very graphic description about what happened and what the weather was like. There's also hunger stones on the ground that often show very, very small bread being sold because the price of bread was often fixed. So it was only the size of the bread that could fluctuate. And you can physically touch how a big loaf of bread would now be less than the palm of your hand. But I think even today, we still struggle with kind of translating a number such as, I don't know, we have 15 gigatons of emissions left in this decade or 1.5 degrees or 3 degrees to make sense, right, to our life. And a lot of the current discussion on climate adaptation or mitigation is circled around making those stories speak to people. And that is where I think these physical monuments can really help, right, give some orientation. And I think there's other ways of commemorating. We asked, for example, for an exhibition up here in Norway for people to send in photographs of every September that they had. If you have a birthday in September, you will have quite a few that show the outdoors, right? And then just put them on the giant wall and you can already see everything changing really dramatically, particularly here where you would usually kind of get snow in around late October maybe. And then things really become very visual. I think we need those little aids de mémoire to kind of support our translation of mathematical abstractions such as climate into our daily experience. One of the things is maybe that insurance companies are also quite interested in this, right? If you do planning on a river bed, then very often you ask meteorologists or geologists to look at what is feasible and what will happen, but their data often evens out the anomalies because, you know, they smooth them away. And if you look at historical records, such as these stones or other historical records, you can much better see the real extremes. And that is where insurance companies are really interested, right? To kind of give you a house insurance for flooding, for example, or for other natural hazards. And that's quite interesting to me. But there's also, of course, something that we call the security paradox, that we had something of a disaster gap in the, let's say, last 100 years, maybe, where those kind of major disturbances weren't so prominent and people forget about these pretty quickly. And a lot of people that think they're in a more secure environment behave in a more risky way. So people on the river, for example, if they build some sort of protection, they'll settle much closer to the river than they usually did. And the security gain that you have is lost almost immediately. or people that wear a helmet on a motorcycle tend to drive a little faster. So these insurance companies are the ones that actually are pretty good at looking at what is a 100-year extreme, if your house is going to be that old, or you're building it in a certain place, or what is a 500-year extreme event or a 50-year extreme event. That was quite surprising to me as a historian to see them come and ask for our data.
Fascinating. Professor Dominic Collett, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Thank you.
And Dominic is Professor of Environmental and Climate History at the University of Oslo.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.